This particular illustration at the close of the Treatise on the Crater is one of the oldest of all Paleolithic images of human beings. And colloquially, it's always said to be Earth Mother. But actually, Earth Mother is a reductive, but this has nothing to do with one. This has to do with what is real for everyone. And there's no way around it. And it may take Jurassic ages for some people to get around to it. This is not saying some people are dinosaurs. I don't think, is it? This image is not of an Earth Mother, it's of the Hermetic Principle, already recognizable in Paleolithic art. These two swirls, yes, they are breasts, but they are breasts brought as the paired polarity, and the stomach is the singular, the oneness where birth happens, because birth is the archetypal transformation. And where the transformation of the polarity comes into the unity, there is where the transformation of life actually happens on the scale in which we participate with it. And so I have this illustration at the end of this treatise, my treatment of it. And let's come back. Let's bring ourselves back. We start off with two hands, and somehow it generates heat. We can't see the heat waves. Are they objective? Yes, they can be measured, but they can be measured as time energy, on a continuum of time energy, but you cannot draw heat waves very well. Well, you can put little squiggles like kids do, but can you see any heat waves? But you can, they can feel them, and they're drawn to them. And that's what Hermes tells Thoth. He says that when we get into the syncopation, into the motion of going on the path, and that the path occurs not because there's a path there, but because we are taking the steps. And as we take the steps, the path occurs. If we stop taking the steps, the path no longer occurs. And as long as we take the steps and the path is occurring, the complement is happening. We are making the ascent because we are doing it, and God is making his descent because we are doing it. And we are met. We don't have to go all the way, just meet him. Because as we are going towards him, he is coming towards us. Because the reality of the universe is in complementation. And so if you're one of the people who has to keep score and keep track of everything, you're getting twice as much for your effort as you thought you were. Hermes says to Tut, man is the embellishment of the divine. And he actually uses the term divine body. Man is the embellishment of the divine body. Now this translation, embellishment, by Scott, is all right as far as it goes. But the great Hermetic teacher, Plotinus, used the term which is better. He used the term emanation. Emanation. In the sense that in a world where time is linked with space, you have manifestation. But in a realm where time is linked with energy, you have emanation instead of manifestation. Manifestations are a preliminary basis upon which to establish what one thinks is true, one thinks is real. But after a transformation in which one's real self is disclosed to one, then emanation becomes a much more comprehensive basis upon which to determine what is real, what is actually happening. Hermes says to Tot, you cannot confuse the two. You cannot do both at the same time, because they are in a complementation. As soon as you do one, the other begins to become hidden. And you cannot do them both, because when both are held, nothing is occurring whatsoever. When both are in perfect equanimity, then you have, in the words of the great Abhidhamma scholar Nagarjuna, you have shunyata, precisely neti-neti. So that when one begins to recognize and understand meaning, understand the noumenon that always is the meaningful context that is with anything, the thingness transforms into a ratio of contextual meaning that surrounds whatever it is that we are looking at, and we see the significance. We see the symbolic meaningfulness. And as we do, the reductive, phenomenal, manifest world becomes hidden. It's always there, but it becomes hidden. Whereas Hermes says that if one continues to see phenomenally and reductively, then the world of emanation is hidden and one tends to disbelieve it. To consider, well, that's just a philosophical speculation, that's religious superstition. It's not something that I can really count on. But in all of the nodes of life, birth, death, the transformation of two coming together, in all those nodes, it is apparent that phenomenal reductiveness is helpless and illusory and has no practical value whatsoever. So Hermes says, it is not possible for a double attachment, my son. You may want to have this double attachment, work them both in, but understand that it's not possible to confuse the two of them. You either have things as a determining objectivity of the world, or there are presences that are energized. There are either schedules which one must meet, or there are cycles which one can participate in. There are diagrams which must be followed and applied, or there are patterns which must be disclosed by doing them. And that those two cannot be mixed together, not because they are polarity. That would throw this whole thing into the realm of a philosophical idea which could be debated. But there's a mystery there. They cannot be mixed not because they are polarity, but because they are complementarity. And if one is emphasized, the other goes into its hidden phase. Whereas if the other is emphasized, the other goes into its hidden phase. Psychoanalysis would call it conscious and unconscious. which is convenient from a phenomenal standpoint, but not a very good language when one deals with the cycle of the real. One discovers that conscious and unconscious are both ideas that are operative in a diagrammatic system of schedules and things, and actually is a phenomenal reduction of the mysterious actuality. And one needs to go deeper, and does. There are three words that have been generated on this planet that characterize very aptly what the whole of this energy pattern cycle as a whole, both what is hidden and what is not hidden. If the manifest is there, the emanation is hidden. If the emanation is there, the manifest is hidden. And this wholeness, Lao Tzu in Chinese called Te. And that whenever you talk about Tao, you have to also talk about Teng. Zarathustra called it Ha. And the ancient Greek word for it was monad. And what it means is the completeness that transcends oneness. It transcends oneness in that one is an omnipresent aspect, but is paired always with the numinous all. And so when Lao Tzu talks about Te as unity, he talks about Te as the unity of emanation and manifestation together. And that oneness is not just one, but it's one over the mystery. One over zero, one over X. Or as Tolstoy, at the end of his life, when he was having mystical visions every half hour, and finally got fed up with Sophie after 50-some years and decided that he had to flee, and fled with his daughter Tatiana, one of his last entries in his diary before he dropped dead at Astapovo was that he had finally found a way to express God satisfactory as X over zero as a ratio of the unknown over the nothing making a mystery. And the old 82-year-old Tolstoy finally got it. He finally was able to say exactly what he knew was that the reductive quality of language was always veiling the pristine presence of spiritual actuality, which had become so sensitive, and finally was able to understand something important which the Hermetic tradition always has the privilege and the grandeur to disclose, and that is that we are capable of a language which can say exactly what we mean if we have the courage to mean what we say. There's a famous book by a British philosopher published by Cambridge University Press a number of years ago by Stanley Clavell, Must We Mean What We Say? And he wrote this after he was reading Thoreau and got all wrapped up in Thoreau's metaphysics of language. And he understood that if we have the courage to mean what we say, we will find the very words, the very language, say what we mean, because language and mind are a complementation. They come in together. And when they are brought together in a wholeness, a spontaneous kind of spiritual language springs forth and with its gorgeous wings flaps once and takes us on the ascent all the way. That's what Chuang-Tzu says. That the bird of the spirit only has to flap its wings once. It's grand enough and great enough that one flap takes us all the way. The old magical phrase was that the true aspirant becomes sky-clad in an instant. But Hermes says to his son, understand that you cannot do both. You cannot manipulate the phenomenal world and be in the emanational energy continuum. That you have to make a choice between the two, not on the basis of polarity, but on the basis of emphasis in complementation. And he says, the words in English translation are, he who wills to make his choice is then left free to choose the one or the other. That's what the English translation reads. He who wills to make the choice is then left free to choose the one or the other. There are two articles there. A's, ands, and the's are articles in language. The one or, that's inclusive, the one or the other. Oneness in the sense of te, a herad, a monad. Other in the sense of alien, otherness, non-one, non-te. Confusion is not a Chinese philosopher. Pardon me, I have to play. Still a boy. He says, Tat, understand, it is not possible to take both. And so, one choice that you have is called the worse, and the other choice that you have is called the better. And understand that this is not a polarity. Evil worse versus angelic better. That would be a non-hermetic way of seeing. That would trap you in a reductive phenomenal aspect of looking at things. It's not that's bad, that's good. What does Bill Murray say in Ghostbusters? He says, I'm fuzzy on the good, bad thing. What does it mean? Whereas Hermes says, we're fuzzy if we reduce things down to a good-bad polarity, because the choice of worse or better is this. If we choose to polarize the two, that's the worst. Whereas if we choose to complement the two together in a larger, more meaningful resonance of understanding, that's the better. That's why the statement is, he who wills to make his choice will be left free to make that choice. Because the freedom comes in when one chooses the better to have them together as a complementation. Whereas you would jail yourself indefinitely if you went the other way and made them polarized. Because it's only in the polarized light that one reduces things and precipitates them out and says, well, that's that. And on that basis, I'm going to judge you, 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 and myself, and whatever we do. And on that basis of reducing human beings down to bricks, you can build a very good fascist state, if you want to be in that. But why do that? It's a meaningless deal. Even if it were accomplished, it would be meaningless. Because that realm of the universe has no meaning. The only way it can sustain itself is to have no meaning. Because as soon as the slightest iota of meaning comes in, the whole energy begins to stir. That, well, what else is there to know? What else is there to find? What else didn't they tell us? What else haven't I told myself? And one begins the kind of career that Rousseau had, of trying to find out what else he was hiding from himself in life by his stupid doggedness of trying to think himself complete and mature on a very sandbox level. He went overboard, but, I mean, one does. This quality, Hermes says to Tat, this quality of shifting transformatively from things that are supposed to be objective in themselves, shifting from that to a quality of proportional meaning, has a quality which the Greek word is gnosis. He says, as soon as we begin that transformation away from this reductive world to the other, a pilot light in our spirit comes on, and that pilot light, the Greek word for it is genesis. There's a beginning. A beginning whose resonance, continuing resonance, is gnosis. That gnosis is the resonance of an actual beginning that happened because a real transformation happened. What transformation? We weaned ourselves away from illusion and popped into the realm of the real. And as soon as we do that, something in us, its ears go up. And even though it may not at first hear anything, it knows its ears went up. And it knows that it wouldn't have ears unless we were made to hear something. And there must be something to hear, so let's listen. And Hermes says, Todd, as soon as that beginning happens, if you will hold on to it, it will carry you all the way in the ascent to the real. You don't have to worry about whether you got enough energy or not. Because the worry about whether you have enough energy or not is a phenomenal, reductive, gauge consulting kind of stupidity which is irrelevant. Just as you are is all the time energy that was ever needed for you to make your ascent to the real. And that's what happens. And he says, when this happens, we begin to recognize, it starts to occur to us that, and we recognize that contemplation is a cinching of meaning into truth. That the meaning that's generated by our actions, by our activity of transforming away from things to the proportioned, ratioed realm of understanding, that that meaning, when it is brought into the acceptance, our acceptance cinches that meaning and makes it true. And when we do that, truth is of such a nature, asha, is of such a nature that it completes. What does it do? It completes. One feels annealed to the all. That one's oneness is in a ratio, one over the infinite. And that ratio, myself over the infinite, is not the scary phobic thing it would be in a reductive world. Me dropped into an abyss. But it's me and the openness of the all together as an expression of eternity. And when Plotinus says at this point, one realizes that the soul has wings and that it freely flies in a realm where the ego would have plummeted in fear. But the soul is made to fly in that medium. And it's with one flap of those wings that the soul can go home, is home. Hermes says to Tot, all of this will happen if you will but dip yourself in your basin. More next week.